Om Gyanajimadandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. How important is initiation? In one sense, it's a formality, but in another sense, it is a necessary formality. Initiation signifies commitment. And as we were speaking yesterday, commitment is a pillar in a relationship. It means you are declaring your intentions and you are dedicating yourself to act on those intentions. Therefore, we talk about committed relationships, as opposed to one-night affairs or hookups. A committed relationship means that the two persons are dedicated to one another. Of course, in the relative world of material existence, committed relationships basically mean as long as I feel the commitment is in my self-interest and you feel the commitment is in your self-interest, the commitment will go on. But as soon as there is any, as soon as I have a perceived, I perceive a shortcoming in your commitment, then the relationship, we all can understand, the relationship should break. Initiation commitment solidifies our dedication to Krishna and his service through parampara. Because of the formal hooking up to Krishna through parampara, we get strength. Now, as you all know, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami quotes Lord Chaitanya as having said, as soon as the holy name touches the tip of the tongue, there's transformation. The holy name does not wait for initiation. It doesn't wait for any other activities. The holy name is independent, perfect, and complete. Nevertheless, a devotee recognizes that he or she needs all the help possible. Last night we spoke about how dependency on guidance is a normal factor of material existence. People want the best advice all the time. Financial advice, relationship advice, health advice. So why should we be surprised that in spiritual life, guidance is so important? By formally connecting to the Guru Parampara, you become eligible as a committed, enrolled student to receive the full benefits of the Bhakti Academy. The example Srila Prabhupada always gave, as you know, someone can attend a university class without formal enrollment and sit in the back of the class and you'll learn something, certainly. But by formally enrolling, you get more credit and you are more easily recognized. There are always exceptions, and Krishna is independent. I remember, for example, during my university days, in which we were treated or cursed by the best professors in the world. And there was one professor who was admired by all the other professors, but he had no formal university education. How did he know so much? How did he learn so much? He was poor. So as in his student days, in his 20s, he started a business to write term papers for students at a price. He was just a poor boy from Arkansas or something like that. Yet he, to make a living, he just started writing term papers. You know, pay me $200, I write your paper. And he did. He wrote so many papers, hundreds of papers, that he knew so much. So eventually his fame spread, and even the professors at Yale University recognized him, that he is topmost. Now, that's not the recommended path. As Srila Prabhupada writes in Nectar Devotion, you can wait around for an honorary degree from university, but that's not the recommended way. So you basically shouldn't wait around. You should do the work. You should take up the committed practice of bhakti so that you have all the opportunities to be recognized by Krishna. Why leave something to chance? When we approach the initiation fire, we are recognizing our dependency on guidance. Dependency on Krishna, the Shastra, Guru, the Vaishnavas. We are happy to participate in a guidance culture. And this is what makes a community of devotees so special. The community of devotees means a guidance community in which there's no need for anyone to feel you have to reinvent the wheel every year with your life situations. So many times I hear from younger devotees, "Oh, Maharaj, I'm really in a situation and I don't know if you'll understand. You know, it's kind of unique." And I always gently answer, most likely, it's a rerun movie. And that rerun has probably been seen about 100 times. And in every time, it's true. In every case, it's true. So in a guidance-based community, as much as possible, the younger ones, spiritually and materially, can benefit from the experience of the predecessors. You see, you have two things to balance. You have youthful enthusiasm and energy, and you have wisdom gained from experience through the school of hard knocks. So both need each other. In a wisdom community, which is based on guidance, you need vigor and enthusiasm. You need energy. But that energy and enthusiasm just can't proceed like things have never been done before. The joke you may have heard in the early days of ISKCON, back in the 60s, early 70s, there was a predominant saying in the counterculture at that time, never trust anyone over 30. But never did we all think that we would become over 30. Basically, Srila Prabhupada, with a few exceptions, Srila Prabhupada was the only adult in the Hare Krishna movement. It's amazing what he accomplished with such recruits. It's just inconceivable. But due to his perfect surrender to Krishna, he made the best use of whatever Krishna sent him and didn't complain. We like to whinge and complain. Why doesn't Krishna do this for me? Why doesn't Krishna give me that? Why has Krishna put me in this situation? We like to whine like that. But Srila Prabhupada's example was that he made the best use. Ecstatically, he made the best use of whatever Krishna sent him. So we have much more experience in ISKCON these days. And that experience should combine with the youthful enthusiasm. The wisdom of experience shouldn't crowd out the youthful enthusiasm, nor should the youthful enthusiasm ignore the wisdom of the elders. The best deal is when both combine, because both are absolutely necessary. I'll give you an example I sometimes tell in traveling. It's a true story. It's from a kind of small temple down under. And the temple had gone through the usual phase where no one was living in the temple anymore. Everyone was living outside the temple. And they would gather on Sunday for the Sunday feast. And so there weren't many missionary activities at all going on. And so somehow or other, one young man, he was 20 years old, he decided, I want to give my life to Krishna. I want to do full-time service. So he moved in to the temple. And in the whole building, there was just about, you know, just two pujaris living there and this new person. And so he began to enthusiastically do so many duties. And he was always asking, okay, when's the weekly Harinam party? I'm ready to go out. What else should I do? What else should I do? I'm cleaning. I'm serving the devotees. This is wonderful. But the older devotees, older means they had been around in that temple maybe 20 years. So they started telling him, hey, you don't understand. You may be enthusiastic now, but just you wait. Just wait. In a few years, you're going to have problems. We know. In a few years, you're going to realize that, you know, everything isn't cheerio. And, you might as well prepare for that now. You might as well just align yourself now for what's coming in the future. You may be enthusiastic now, but in the future, you're going to hit a wall. And so why don't you just take that into account now and just, just tone down now and start thinking about yourself and what you want and how you need to, what you need for your life. Don't be so eager to take up so many services now. And so the young man, he's 20 years old. He was quite bewildered. He said, I understand there's some truth in what you're saying about, I have to think what I want to do with my life, but, I'm just 20. I've been burned out on material life. I'd just like to spend a few years in full-time service at least, No. We've gone that route before. Full-time service. Be very careful. They have an expression down under. You'll wind up being roster fodder. They just want to put your name on the roster list for services. Be careful. We've been there, done that. So he just kept hearing this. And finally, he went to the temple president in desperation and said, I just really want to surrender to Krishna. Is it possible? So that's an example of so-called experience slowing down the enthusiasm. The best, as I said, is the combination of youthful enthusiasm with the wisdom of the elders. And that wisdom of the elders manifests in such gracious and discreet ways. Another example I often give while I'm traveling to show how in traditional societies the elders play such an important role. They recognize the youthful enthusiasm and creativity. At the same time, they know we've got traditions. There are patterns in life that we cannot ignore. So there's one tribe in West Africa. Persons might consider it primitive, but this is what they do. When they find out that two young people in the village have fallen into love, The whole village gathers in the village square, hundreds of persons, and they put the two persons, the boy and girl, in the center, and they sit them there. And then the whole village just starts laughing and laughing and laughing and laughing. And this goes on for an hour. And then after an hour, everyone just gets up and leaves. They're making a point that it's so nice that you're feeling that romance thing. But, you know, our village, in order to perpetuate itself, needs relationships built on more than just the, you know, shooting star in the sky romance thing. We need stable relationships based on duty and commitment. So we understand the romance buzz, but we can't build our society on that. So we're laughing about it. And in other words, we're letting you know that we need something a bit more serious that will withstand the duration of time. This is a primitive tribe, remember. So, definitely primitive by Hollywood, Bollywood standards. So, that shows you the value of elders. They have seen the patterns. They have seen the cycles. They know the probabilities. At the same time, they value the youthful vigor and enthusiasm. So that's why the tribe just laughs. They don't like directly, you know, chastise the young people. They don't squash them. They just, we understand, but. And the young people get the hint and they appreciate it. So in a bhakti community that you all have the chance here to make better and better, a wisdom culture is so essential. And that wisdom culture is based on guidance. The last time I was here, I spoke about how you have a unique opportunity here in the C.C. Radha Kalasanji community. You have a real chance to develop a strong urban community. And there's no doubt that these days people are looking for community more than ever before. It's not that they just come right out and say it all the time. I'm lonely. I want a community. Most people won't leave themselves open like that. Some will. But unconsciously or consciously, that's what they're looking for. You see, the technology of today has made people so isolated. The internet, the smartphones, so on and so forth, haven't brought people more together. People are more isolated. They don't relate to each other in a depth way via the technology that's become so prevalent. So many social psychologists and sociologists have made studies showing that loneliness is an epidemic, especially in the USA. Statistics in the USA show that most Americans have very few friends outside their immediate family. And those immediate families are breaking apart since these days more children are born to mothers under 30 outside of marriage than inside marriage. So where do people turn? You go to a family gathering, talking about, you know, the current state of Indian families in the USA, but you go to a family gathering, and it becomes a battlefield. Who's divorcing who, and whose side should you be on when they split up, and which marriage are these kids from, your second or your fourth marriage? It becomes so complicated, you know? I hear this all the time. What's the use in going to these things? I'm not going to the July 4th barbecue anymore, you know? It just turns into hostilities. So there were two golden rules about family gatherings. You know, this is July 4th. So number one, you don't discuss religion. Number two, you don't discuss politics. Now it's number three, you don't discuss family affairs because you just don't know, you know, what's going to happen. It's a minefield, you know. You have to be careful, you know, who to side with. So people are lonely. They're longing for a meaningful life. And you'll see that more and more. as people realize their political arrangements and economic arrangements are not going to fulfill them. The dream has worn thin. And so who can I associate with? Who can I be with? Who has meaning in their life? So they would love to find a community that has youthful enthusiasm and the wisdom of the elders. That's the advantage of a guidance culture. So I think that you all have such a special opportunity to further progress in that way. More than any temple I've seen in the USA. You actually have an urban enclave with congenial devotees who care for each other. And you can present such an attractive presence to the outside world. And if you just enhance that more and more, you'll be in position to take advantage of the coming years. It's always good to position yourself ahead of the wave. I was talking once with His Holiness Shivaram Maharaj, and we were both remarking that if we had only really knew that the Iron Curtain was going to fall, we could have been much better positioned to take advantage. Prabhupada said, if his books are distributed behind the Iron Curtain, communism is finished. So the few devotees who were pushing ahead in that program, we took Prabhupada's words as our life and soul, but in terms of actually making plans for such a reality to happen, that was just... The whole concept was so far beyond us. And when communism actually fell, the CIA admitted they were caught off guard. Even they had no idea how things were going to unravel so quickly. Maharaj and I were discussing that if we had been ahead of the wave, we could have served Krishna even better. But instead, we reacted to the circumstances, the Berlin Wall coming down, this, that, oh, what to do, wow. How to take advantage. There were some advantages taken, but nothing compared to what the total picture could have been in terms of seizing the opportunity if you had been prepared. For example, where New Brajadam is now in Hungary, the ideal farm community, that land was bought upon the fall of communism. If they had to pay for that same land today, they would be paying 60 times the price. No way. But right upon the fall of communism in Hungary, they made that arrangement and got the land for the price of a song. But much more could have been done like that if we had some advanced planning, based on the fact that the system may not be around. But it was too inconceivable to think. The system was so entrenched, so much suffering, decade after decade, since World War II, basically 50 years or more of ironclad regime. So in another sense, you can understand why devotees couldn't make advanced plans. It just looked impossible. In November... before everything fell apart. In November, the prime minister or whatever of East Germany, now known as the most repressive police state known in human history, one in every six persons was a police informer. In November, he makes an announcement, communism will be here forever. East Germany will be forever. 6 weeks later, he's gone. Like, oh, country's finished. So, who could predict that? Similarly, though, in your situation here, we're not doomsdayers. We have the best thing to offer, whether there's economic boom or economic bust. We have the best thing. Whether the political system goes on with its hoopla or not, we still have the best thing to offer. So we should make our winning capacities even more so. Because definitely, from what I have seen, and I travel on every continent of the world except Antarctica, What I've seen, you have such a unique presence here, such unique dynamics. You've got the wisdom of the elders. You see, it's all in this Kesava Bharati Maharaj sitting there, in his grace Nityananda Prabhu. You have elders like that. And then you have the young tycoons ready to do something. Give us a chance. Let's have a go at it. That is glorious. You have such an established temple community, a restaurant, a school, houses in the area. Now, there are a few other places that have something like this in terms of physical facility, but what I find unique is the mood of the community. So congenial, so open, warm-hearted. Obviously, there's been a lot of work put in to cultivate that mood. And that is your number one draw card. The mood, the ambience of the community. You have so many elders visiting here. And you're making plans to even increase the number of new and younger persons. So this is a community that's going places. And you'll see more and more that what you have to offer is in high demand. So in terms of initiation, it's a ritual that's necessary, and it's connecting you to a community of guidance, a culture of guidance, a tradition, a lineage of guidance. And that tradition, that lineage, that sampradaya is not just some kind of construct that has no real import. No, it's very significant. The sampradaya transmits. The example Prabhupada gave, the eyeglasses. They don't get in the way of what you see, but they actually allow you to see more clearly what's there. So the sampradaya functions in that way. I'll give you an example from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. When Lord Chaitanya was touring South India, he came to a place called Pandharapur. And in Pandharapur, he met one devotee, a disciple of Madhavendra Puri named Sri Rangapuri. Lord Chaitanya was taking lunch at a brahmana's house. And he was informed that there's a disciple of Madhavendra Puri in the same village. His name is Sri Rangapuri. So immediately, Lord Chaitanya went to seek him out. And as soon as Lord Chaitanya saw him, Lord Chaitanya fell flat on the ground in dandavats and broke out in ecstatic symptoms of love of Krishna. And Sri Rangapuri was watching this. And as he picked Lord Chaitanya off the ground, he said, "You must have some connection to Madhavendra Puri. Otherwise, how could you be displaying this ecstatic love?" I detect prema ganda, the fragrance of pure ecstatic love. That means connection to Madhavendra Puri. So in this way, Rangapuri verified the importance of sampradaya. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur explains that before the time of Madhavendra Puri, Krishna was just worshipped alone. And then with Madhavendra Puri came the Radha Krishna worship emphasis. And that made the heights of ecstatic love of Krishna possible. So, Lord Chaitanya confirmed. First, Rangapuri picks up Lord Chaitanya and tells him that I detect something, a connection to a sampradaya, the sampradaya of Madhavendra Puri. And then they both embraced shoulder to shoulder and cried. And then they calmed themselves, and Rangapuri they discussed for 5 or 6 days Krishna Katha. And after that 5 or 6 days of discussing Krishna Katha, Ranga Puri just inquired, can you tell me something about your birthplace? And Lord Chaitanya told him, I'm from Navadvip. And Ranga Puri said, it's very interesting. I remember accompanying Madhavendra Puri to Navadvip. And we visited a certain house. And the husband and wife were wonderful devotees. And the thing I remember most was the taste of an unprecedented curry that was served. That's a Ranga Puri remembered. I don't mean to make him feel uncomfortable. It reminds me of dining at Nityananda Prabhu's house. Keshava Bharati Maharaj warned me, this is going to be unprecedented. So that's the effect of prasad. Here, ages ago, this Ranga Puri and Madhavendra Puri visited the home of Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Mata. But although it was so long ago, Ranga Puri still remembered. I remember some prasad I had. It was unprecedented. And after remembering the prasad, then he started to remember the qualities of Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Mata. She's very chaste, very humble. She's like Jagat Mata, the mother of the universe. I also remember they had a son, Shankararanya, and he told then Lord Chaitanya told him, yes, that is my home, and he referred to his Purva Ashram. He said, in my previous ashram, Jagannath Mishra was my father and Shankararanya was my older brother. In my previous ashram. Why does Lord Chaitanya say that? Is he being cold towards his relatives and unfeeling? No, Lord Chaitanya is Nyasi Shiromani, the crest jewel of all the sannyasis. And he always wanted to demonstrate very rigidly the principles of sannyas, although his followers didn't like that. There was always this loving tension between Mahaprabhu and his followers that they didn't want him practicing severe austerities, and Lord Chaitanya was determined to demonstrate very sternly the behavior of a sannyasi. So, in this way, Mahaprabhu said to Ranga Puri, my Purva Ashram, in my previous ashram, that was my father and that was my brother. And then Ranga Puri informed him that in this very place, Pandarpur, Shankararanya left this world and achieved perfection. So we see this emphasis on sampradaya has enormous impact. Remember Ranga Puri's words. You must have a connection to Madhavendra Puri because without such a connection to him, there can't be ecstatic love. And I detect prema ganda. I detect the fragrance of ecstatic love of Radha and Krishna in you. So we should always consider the extraordinary, inconceivable gems in our sampradaya. And we love to focus on what? On the inheritance that Srila Prabhupada has passed to us. Taking it from parampara and passing it on to us. The selfless service dedicated to fulfilling the desires of Lord Chaitanya beyond any personal consideration. According to our ashram style, we approach that goal of selfless, becoming the selfless service of Mahaprabhu. And through that route, we receive whatever ecstatic blessings that Krishna wants to bestow through the parampara, through Madhavendra Puri down, through Srila Prabhupada and his representatives. So the holy name is received through parampara. You can chant the holy name. Anyone can chant the holy name. But there's no comparison, in effect, to when the holy name is received properly through parampara. Sometimes devotees like to listen to this one chanting, that one chanting, who are professional chanters of Hare Krishna, and they're not understanding that it's nice musical entertainment, but the potency won't be there. And in fact, there'll be a negative effect because you'll become conditioned to hearing the sound of offensive, empty chanting in kirtan. And that will start to become your norm. And you'll be even more drawn to just musical entertainment with someone reciting the shell, so to speak, of the Hare Krishna mantra. And you'll become conditioned. Yeah, that's it. That's kirtan. That's it. That's it. The real potency of chanting Hare Krishna comes through parampara. And the initiation, yajna, the Harinam Diksha, is that formal receiving of the holy name. And you are committing yourself to chant without offense. That means we should not be afraid of a lifelong career of trying to chant Hare Krishna properly. Just like someone can spend their whole life building up their job advancement. No one would consider that abnormal. Okay, you started at the ground level. Now you're at the top executive level. Well done, well done. Everyone can understand that. But similarly, why can't we understand that it's a lifelong career to chant Hare Krishna with attention and fix our mind on that lifelong career development? What is my career? I am a chanter of Hare Krishna who seeks to chant without offense. That's my career. Grihitako, vanetako, sadahare bolidako. Whether you're a householder or renunciant, still, that's your career. So those who take first initiation should remember that they're signing up for this career opportunity. They've been hired. And for those who are taking second initiation, they should understand that our society needs real brahmanas. A wisdom culture requires brahmanas. At lunch yesterday, Kesha Bharati Maharaj and Nityananda Prabhu and I were discussing how, on the one hand, you have this economic paradox. You have the free economy proponents. Just let the rich go for it. The profits will trickle down. Look at the example of Texas. You know, they made everything possible for big business, big oil, whatever. And therefore, things aren't so bad here. And that's the way it'll be forever. And then you have the other side. No, no, no. Look at the amazingly wide gap between the most rich, you know, the 1% and the 99%. Just see, no civilized society can go on like that. History has shown it. When there's such a widening gap between the haves and the have-nots, a society can't stay together. Face it. Get real. Do you want this society to last? So there are these two distinct views. And they really can't be resolved on the material platform because the material world is a world of duality. Hot, cold, pleasure, pain, sickness, health, free economy, welfare state. You solve one duality, Maya will throw 10 more at you. That's the way it is. The solution has to be from spiritual culture. And the brahmanas play a key role in that as the head of the social body. So those who are taking brahman initiation, please remember your essential role to accumulate wisdom and dispense the wisdom. Prabhupada wanted real brahmanas. As the key to transforming society. All right. So I don't know. Do we take questions during initiation lecture? All right. We are ready to go outside. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.